TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Star Trek Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, why am I seeing T'Pol standing next to you there?
Oh, you can see her too?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm glad I'm not the only one then. Just moral support. Oh. Yeah, moral support.
Yeah. I noticed that she kind of moves the same way you move.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah. Something well, we're really in sync these her. Days. Yeah, okay. We've been spending too much time together. So that's really what it is. Yeah.
That neuro pressure again, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. All right, everyone. We're going to continue our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise today with episode 16 of season 3, Doctor's Orders. And here's a quick rundown. As the Enterprise makes its way to Azadi Prime, it must pass through a region of space where a massive transdimensional disturbance will likely cause fatal brain damage to any conscious human. Dr. Phlox proposes to place the entire human crew in neurosedation for the 4 days it will take to cross the area at full impulse, and volunteers to watch over his comatose crewmates with only Porthos and what appears to be T'Pol for company. As the anomaly begins to expand faster than expected, and Phlox's grip on reality starts to slip, he must navigate an empty ship and overcome hallucinations before the crew suffers permanent neurological damage. So, Matthew, I'm not sure if I have anything to say today because I think I messed up. I prepared for us to discuss Voyager's episode called One and talk about Seven of Nine. Making her way through that nebula.
Yeah.
Did I mess up?
No, you didn't. The writers of Enterprise did because they needed a filler episode. And so they basically just copied and pasted everything that we had done in that episode and just switched out Seven of Nine with Phlox and added some, denobulan nudity. That's really what happened in this episode. So no, you didn't miss anything. It was not you. Yeah. Let's be honest, Chris. There's not a lot to say about this episode because if you have seen it originally, there isn't anything about this episode that really makes it worth the rewatch. And I think that is the thing that's kind of frustrating about it. You know, there's lots of episodes where, you know, gosh, I'd watch Move Along Home before I'd watch this again. you know, I'd still watch this over Prophet and Lace, but that's not saying much, Chris. And so,
Yeah, that's right. That's not saying much. You're right.
Yeah. So, I guess, I don't know. I'd be interested, you know, not that the sense that we're just going to talk for like 3 minutes and we're going to be done, but like, I do think that's a great question because as we're rewatching this and we're thinking about the episodes, is there really anything in this episode that kind of is worth it if you are doing a rewatch, or could you just really just skip this episode and go to the next and not feel like you're missing anything?
Well, you'd be missing John Billingsley's butt as he runs through the ship, but
that's true. That's not really a draw for me personally, but I see, you know, it could be for somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that was not part of One. That's one difference between the two episodes. That's the real question, right? Is it's not unusual for Star Trek to revisit concepts. You know, we can find pairings from across 60 years of Star Trek where one episode feels very much like one that came before it from a different series. This one is so on the nose to the point of Like, even the amount of time that it's going to take to traverse this region of space is 4 days. Like, it's so much a copy of what was done on Voyager with one, that if you're going to do that, you really need to have a reason to do it and bring something really substantial to the table. And that's where I'm not sure that really happens in this episode for me, because, you know, we talked last episode in Harbinger about clearing the deck in terms of relationships and character issues and things as we head into the final stretch of the story. And it made sense what they did in Harbinger with T'Pol in particular, and even with Reed and of course, Trip and so forth. Here, we're focusing exclusively on Phlox. This is actually the first and I think only episode of Enterprise that has no guests at all. You know, it's just John Billingsley and T'Pol for the most part. Some CGI insectoids and things like that. But I don't know that delving into Phlox in this way at this point in the season was even necessary at all. It feels a bit more like, you'll remember, and he had some success even here, Scott Bakula was really pushing the studio to cut the number of episodes down, because traditionally in the modern Star Trek series, the ones from TNG through to this point, you had 26 episodes per season. And they do that for the first couple of seasons. This one has 24. The last season has 22. This feels like a case where, for both episode count and budget, they needed an episode. And so they did a full-on bottle show where they just use the sets they have and you just have minimal characters in there. Yeah. And you have a story that, like, if this were a Next Generation story, and actually I want to compare something there, but if this were a Next Generation story, this type of thing would be fine. And it was fine on Voyager, because with Seven of Nine, Seven was trying to learn to be a human after being a drone for so long.
Exactly.
And so she was grappling with a responsibility that could be difficult for her. Whereas Phlox, I think, is fully capable of dealing with this himself. So they have to throw in this element of denobulans and needing to be, you know, have community and be around people. And so kind of put that twist on it. And I just don't know that that's something that was really necessary for the character.
Yeah.
I want to come back to a TNG thing in a minute, but go ahead and tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right in that. You know, this is one of those places where we do learn some things about Denobulans and then just their interactions, just really more about who they are. We kind of flesh that out a little bit. But that's all there is to this episode. And I think that's the thing that is really difficult about it. And then, you know, I think you made a great point, and Scott Bakula was making a great point then. Guys, we don't need this many episodes, and this is an episode. If you ever wanted to point to an episode and say, absolute filler, no need for this to exist, you could have saved all this money not even doing this episode, and you could have poured it into something else, you know. This is it. This is the type of episode, right? It just wasn't necessary. And I would say, too, specifically, coming off Harbinger, where we're dealing with some really important stuff. We can tell the season is beginning to ramp up. And then you hit this episode and it is like, you just slow way down for no good reason. I mean, at this point, you should be hitting the accelerator. And I think this episode just does a disservice to the season itself, because this is not what you want at this point. You want to get to Azadi Prime. So I think it's just really frustrating in that sense, and it's just not really an episode that, you know, as I was rewatching it, I'm like, I kind of forgot how absolutely boring this episode is if you know the hook. And well, even if the you hook don't isn't know even hook, hard to figure out.
Yeah, that's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even if you don't know the hook, you're watching it the first time. If you've watched enough Star Trek or enough TV or movies, you can pretty much figure out that the pole's not really there, right?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. They're not subtle about it.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, is that this episode isn't even written with the subtlety needed to make this conceit work. And yeah. That's the other thing, is that in the end, nothing about this episode is doing what it needs to do to make it work. Mm-hmm. This is just a place where it's like, guys, it's okay to have 23 episodes, you know?
Yeah. Well, you can't have an odd number. So,
oh, I guess apparently not, you know.
Yeah. I'm not sure that they were ever really that concerned about tricking us into thinking that somehow T'Pol was actually there helping him. I think it's more about psychologically what's going on with Phlox. But, you know, it would be more rewarding to watch it if you were led along mm-hmm. longer about it. You said hit the accelerator. I was just picturing, you know, in Insurrection when Riker needs to fly the Enterprise and the little yes. joystick pops up.
Oh,
I'm picturing like underneath Travis's console here.
Yeah.
There's like an actual, like a metal gas pedal pops up out of the floor when he needs to hit the 100%. Accelerator.
That's exactly what happened. We just didn't actually see it.
And now thinking about Voyager, I bet Tom Paris probably actually made one of those for himself, right? I said I wanted to mention a TNG thing, and it's just that when I think about this type of story where you've got a character who's alone, I always think of Remember Me with Beverly, and it's one of my favorite Next Generation episodes where she just increasingly, bit by bit, becomes the only person on the ship. And it's a different premise and all, but I just, you know, that kind of episode, it was so interesting, and it has so much lasting power to it, enduring power to it, compared with this type of premise where you stick somebody by themselves like this. So T'Pol showing up all the time, though, of all the people on the crew who Phlox could be hallucinating, why do you think it's T'Pol?
I mean, I think it's because, you know, she's the only other alien on board. And so, again, I do think that they're trying to make you think, oh, you know, did I just miss something? Or, you know, is this really T'Pol?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that at the beginning they are trying to do that. And so her being the one makes sense. I wouldn't, you know, any other crew member, it wouldn't work. I think in that sense, her as the choice is great, mm-hmm. right? I think really it's the execution of the script across the board that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit frustrating. This really does feel as though they just ran out of time and they had to put on screen whatever they had. That's kind of what this episode feels like, which is incredibly sad to think that that might be the case, because I want to think that there's more to it than that. Like that. And what's weird is this episode is also directed by Roxanne Dawson. You know, she had directed other Enterprise episodes at this point. And I think just across the board, you know, this is a lackluster episode that is incredibly forgettable. It's not bad in the sense of, like, there are bad episodes where you're just like, you want to scrub your brain after having watched them kind of thing. Yeah. That's not this. No. I think this is just bland.
Yeah.
Right. This is like, you know how they have frosted mini wheats, but then they have regular mini wheats that aren't frosted. This is like unfrosted mini wheats. And it's like, it's so bland, you know, it's dry. Even when you've put milk on it, it's just like, you're just kind of like, you know, and that's what this episode feels like. And so, yeah. And I don't know. Look, this is not an episode where we're going to have a lot to talk about. So is there anything else that kind of sticks with you at all in this episode? Was there anything else in this, you know, in the rewatch where you're like, oh, that was kind of interesting, or, I didn't see that the first time, or was there anything like that for you in this?
Well, I mean, there's the naked phlox. I mean, that was kind of unexpected. Didn't see it the
first
time.
Sounds like a weird band name. So
yeah, there was no naked Seven of Nine running around in one on Voyager.
No.
Beverly didn't strip down in Remember Me. So that was something I hadn't seen before. And apparently, and this is interesting too, apparently that was John Billingsley's idea to do
That's not surprising. You know, having seen enough interviews with him, I'm like, that's not shocking. So
yeah, that's actually not shocking. So, and you mentioned that Roxanne Dawson directed the episode, and it reminds me that Extinction was directed by LeVar Burton. So sometimes you have great directors who end up with subpar episodes because the material that they're being given is not really supporting their directorial skills. Yeah.
There's a game, Chris, that we used to play as kids. It was called Payday. And it's literally a game where it's a board game. And it's a calendar month on the board, right?
Oh,
and you go through
game.
The game, and you would collect bills and paydays and all this stuff. And basically the game was, you know, it's teaching kids what it's like to be an adult, you know? Yeah. And one of the bills there was Middle-Aged Health Club. And on the bill, it said $200 or something like that. And we did the best we could with what we had to work with. That feels like this episode. And yet I don't even know if they did the best they could with what they had to work with. It was like, and this is not to be mean. I'm not degrading Billingsley or Jolene Blaylock or anyone, but it's like everybody phoned this episode in, you know? And so, What would you rate this episode, Chris?
Okay. Well, hold on, though. I mean, you say they phoned it in. I think, you know, I was joking at the very beginning of the show that T'Pol was moving like you. And the reason I brought that up was actually that it seems Jolene Blaylock mimics John Billingsley's movements as Phlox when she is the hallucinated T'Pol, which I think creatively is a really clever thing for her to do as an actress that... to show, not that we needed help, but to show that it's not really T'Pol. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I also feel like she was having just a lot of fun in this episode, not having to be her emotionally controlled self.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is that aspect to the episode as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll just go into my final thoughts then, which is just going back to the question of, why is it T'Pol who he's hallucinating? So, you know, what you described is from a writing standpoint, it makes total sense why they would choose T'Pol, because she's the only one they can choose, right? If the humans have to be unconscious while they're going through this trans-dimensional area of space, this disturbance, then obviously... it can't be any of them, or you would immediately wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can have the idea that, well, you know, Vulcans are immune to this area, but you can't really play that card without any justification about why they would be immune. And, but if you're going to have somebody, then it has to be her, right? My question was more about, why would Phlox hallucinate her? Because he, from an in-universe perspective, he could hallucinate anybody.
Right.
I suppose that as a doctor, he knows it can't be any of the humans. But I think the bigger reason is the one that you said, which is that she's the other alien on the ship. Because they have this relationship over the course of the series that they're the two outsiders. You know, they eat together. They talk to each other. Sort of outside of everything else that's going on. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, I think that.
And she's the rational run, right, on the ship. And so, I mean, if she's there, it's almost like I think he is, you know, his subconscious is trying to create the rationality needed while he's losing it. And of course, mm-hmm. you know, she's not really there, and so she's not really that much help, even though she does know a lot of the things that need to be done, but she just can't do them herself.
But she can't do them, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's that aspect to it as well. I think that that's why it's chosen as the character. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to give this episode 2 missing pairs of underwear.
Mm, nice.
Yeah. How about you?
I think there's only one rating for this episode, and it's a pair of cheeks.
A pair of cheeks.
Yeah.
So is that a 2 or a 1? Because they go together, so.
Yeah, that's for the listeners to decide, Chris. I'd love people hit me up in the Babel Conference. Or of course, you know, they can find me all over social media. Let me know what you think that means.
All right. So, yeah, let us know, everyone. As Matthew mentioned, maybe the best place to do that is in the Babel Conference on Facebook. It's our listeners group. It's there to continue the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send you a show, and choose Warp 5, and that will come to us. And you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not navigating your own transdimensional disturbances with a hallucinated sidekick, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all over social media, as I was mentioning earlier. MattRushing02 is the name to look for. Of course, here on the network in the 602 Club, talking about all the franchises outside of Star Trek we love. Then over on the Nerd Party Network, a couple of shows. One is completed called Owl Post, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then you can find me on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. And Chris, when you're not hallucinating Vulcans standing next to you, where can people find you?
Happens to me a lot. And people look at me weird when I do it. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network. Of course, doing all those shows with you. You can catch Larry Nemechek and me on The Ready Room. You can find me in the back catalog across many, many shows from the past 15 years if you'd like to hear my thoughts on a wide range of Star Trek topics. And you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. And Blue Sky's where I'm most active, but you can find me everywhere. So I'd love to hear from you there. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else that we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, how to get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I hope you're not creeped out by like unhatched insect eggs and things like that, because probably going to run into some next time when we talk about hatchery.
Well, Chris, I guess that means I need to bring her on the raid. So let's go.